Hello and welcome to Reframing the Future, the HGKC podcast series where we talk to business people about their experiences and challenges of building successful businesses. I am Kim Jones and I am delighted to welcome today Peter Marchbank, MD of RPI UK, who have been leading the world in rotary measurement since 1940. RPI are specialists in rotary measurement. They deliver products into the aerospace, power generation, dimensional metrology, scientific and advanced engineering industries around the world. Peter joined the business 4 years ago, and he has a compelling story that reveals the sources of value in a business and the winning strategies he and his team have employed to build a long-term future. So our conversation today is an opportunity for Peter to reflect on the last 4 years and share his insights on a wide range of topics, from strategy and planning, culture, people, innovation, value, education, and something that's very important to him, the next generation. So welcome, Peter. We met at our HGKC roundtable on risk management in September, and that was a really interesting conversation. And that's why we're having our conversation today. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background before joining RPI. We'll start our story there.
Yeah, basically, you can tell from my accent, I'm not from London. I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa, and started my career with an English company where I had a scholarship to study mechanical engineering, which after that was finished, I worked for the company and found myself basically running one of their engineering divisions and saw an opportunity to acquire that division from them as the company was looking at focusing on core businesses, and engineering was something that wasn't really their core business because they were a packaging-based company. And I acquired that through a management buyout in the early 90s. And I think my journey into sort of, I would call it entrepreneurship or looking for how do you create opportunities and started. And I mean, that business was, once we took it out of under big corporate control, we managed to grow that business fantastically from about 14 million to almost 50 million within 5 years. And we grew that business internationally until inevitably it got bought out by somebody. And I thought I'll go and play golf all day, but I was only 35 years old. So nobody my age was playing golf. And so I very quickly started getting back into other business interests and started another business. And so began a host of starting businesses, building them up and selling them. And until we came here in the beginning of 2006 and basically took a year or so off, traveled around Europe, did stuff, and then took full advantage of the property market, which was, you know, booming in this country. And so bought some old buildings, converted them into apartments, and did project management basically for that, until after a while got relatively bored. I always told people that when the crash came, you know, it was all because I saw it coming. It wasn't really.
You're out there ahead of the rest of us.
Right place, right time, that I sort of sold the last of our stock and was already talking to a company in Bristol, Third Dimension, which was also a startup, although it had been going for a number of years. And so we moved down to Bristol from Shropshire, and basically, you know, that started another sort of round of different industry, which was the metrology industry, and the business we grew by almost 400% in about 3 or 4 years, became a very, you know, successful business. The founder was still there, and, you know, really was in a position then to really take over as CEO, and I decided I'll move on, where I then was approached by the owners of RPI to come and join them. So, I mean, that's how I got to RPI after a number of years in this. But fundamentally, it's because I like to build things, and I do that through the people that are, or what I call the latent talent that's within businesses.
Well, that's a really good starting point. So tell us a little bit about RPI UK, what they do and.
RPI basically is also in the metrology sector. However, it's been going for well over 40 years, started in 1940 as a subsidiary to Newell Machine Tools, which were making machines for the engineering industry and mainly the aerospace industry. And they needed something to measure stuff that these people were producing on these machines. And so began a company called Optical Measurement Tools. And throughout the years, through a number of acquisitions and mergers, you know, with various people, including Horsman, it became a company really focused on rotary and angular positioning, very accurate stuff. So things like turbine, to build turbines for aircraft manufacturing, aircraft engine manufacturing, and then things like satellite navigation systems to accurately calibrate them. The company then, you know, got bought and sold and was eventually owned by a bunch of venture capitalists who really just saw it as part of a portfolio and really didn't invest in its future. And so I think a period of about 20 years of, I would call it disinvestment, by the time the company was then purchased and back into a family-owned company again as it started out. And that's really just shortly after that I joined the company. And then we started sort of looking at, you know, how do we rebuild this company? And what I always say, despite fierce competition from its previous owners, the company still survived.
Give us a little bit of the scale of
we're a small company,
locations.
so we're about 30 people, but we do manufacture, we design and manufacture ourselves. We also outsource a lot of stuff, and that has helped us retain a relatively small number of people. Although when I joined here, we were about 24 people, but we have added to that as we've grown as a
Well,
business.
that's a lot of the value that there is now in business, isn't it? It's about the strategic partnerships, alliances, how you
Absolutely.
deliver, and some of that very core expertise and knowledge that is in the people left in the business, you know, that core enablement.
I think I found that, and with my previous company, Third Dimension, you know, we did a very similar thing, you know, which was just have a look at what is our core competencies, you know, what do we do, what are we good at, and everything else, you know, does it need to be a core competency, or do we need to find a strategic partner which is their core competency, and we're getting maybe a, and I always say that, you know, somebody that's making bicycle wheels. It's not only making bicycle wheels for me, they're making bicycle wheels for everybody, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. So they're getting that experience of that, all those people. I'm getting the benefit of that. And that's no different in a business. So essentially that's, you know, what we do in this business. You know? We look around for where can we add value and which partners can add value to our business.
So tell us a bit about how you went about creating your plan and starting to implement it, because it was a really big shift for that firm.
It was really a big shift. I mean, the firm was run on very old, traditional, almost autocratic lines where there was one boss man and he basically decided everything and said no to everything and yes to very little. And I think that the business survived out of just not spending money. They didn't, but when you looked at the business, they were
It was
basically
declining otherwise,
finding,
really.
in actual fact, when I joined them, they had, you know, they were producing losses for the last 2 or 3 years, you know, so it was already in that phase. So, you know, where we basically started was just define what's the purpose of the business. So what I did was I just got the core team together and decide and together we sort of hashed out what is the core purpose of this business. And once we defined that and everybody had agreed that that was the core business, we then looked at breaking that down and finding out, okay, what is the needs of our customers then? And we did lots of surveys, really finding out what is it that our customers really need. And then we matched what we're currently doing against that needs analysis and found out where are the gaps and what are we doing that is not totally satisfying that. I mean, together with that, we also identified what are the opportunities, because it's not just about what are the needs of those existing. So it was what opportunities exist out there. And then we almost did a traditional business analysis on that by then determining what is the external environment that we are operating in, what's the internal environment. So what are our capabilities? What are our assets that we have, both intangible, tangible assets, human resources, assets, which was in most business, it's been my experience, you always find that in actual fact, machines and equipment is actually not where the assets are. However, accountants always say, those are the assets because that's very measurable, but people are the biggest measurable asset. And that took us quite a while, and it was a change in shift of mindset within this business, because people, they didn't see themselves as being the asset to the business. So it was change in that. And also, because our average age was something like 47, close to 50.
Yeah.
And a lot of them had been here for many, many years, to try and change that and let them think.
So there hadn't been much investment in new skills, new knowledge, bringing on the next generation, which I know has been really important to you.
So what we set about doing, we then developed a strategy of, okay, how are we now going to take advantage of and utilize these core capabilities that we have and the skill set that we have, and once we've matched them. So, and we ended up with the three sort of legged, or three, not tier, legged more than that, strategy of that basically identified that, we needed to develop new products. It was very clear that our products were old. They weren't up to date. They were just really dependable. We had a fantastic reputation. You buy something from RPI, it's for life. I mean, we had equipment out in the field 30, 40 years later, still in use. And however, the company, they weren't extracting any value out of that.
And the big industries that you serve, they were already shifting, weren't they? So, you were looking for new products to go along with that sort of rising enablement and skills in those sectors.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that came out through our surveys was that years ago, big companies like Rolls-Royce and many of the other aero engine, Pratt & Whitney and GE companies, they used to have engineers who would buy something from ourselves, something from another company, and they would put together a system to solve a problem. Those people weren't there anymore. And also those companies had looked at it and said, but that's not their core business. Their core business is making engines, not making measurement systems for engines. And they were looking to companies to make complete solutions to help their production. And we hadn't moved with that, identifying that we had to then decide what do we need to then do. And so part of that was this whole new product development. The next one was we needed to develop new markets. And because essentially what we do is big capital pieces of equipment with long sales cycles. And if you're only dealing with it locally, it just isn't enough local business to sustain the kind of investment we needed to, an innovation that we needed. So we went out and another strategy was to develop a network of distributors. And then the third thing was operational excellence. How do we support those activities to become a really efficient, productive organization that can bring new products to market very quickly, very efficiently, that our systems are constantly monitoring changes in the market. And so began the sort of journey of 3-year plans. And so we decided where are we now? Where do we want to be? Developed a plan, looked at things from quarters, five forces to every sort of established business model that was out there, and adapted it to our own needs. And I think the first sort of year, it took us to change the mindset of the people, they were allowed to make decisions. They were allowed to. And, what I've always found is that, the people are your biggest asset. And it's that, people call it, I call it latent value that sits in your business that that most businesses never unlock, because they end up with these paradigms that, you know, if somebody's a machinist, well, he couldn't possibly know anything about marketing, you know, where that's in actual fact not true. You know, most people know a little bit of a lot of things, and creating an environment where people are able to contribute on every single level, you know, just helps them and break down those silos which in a traditional business exist.
A lot of the people would have been task focused perhaps in the past, and now you're asking them for their opinions. It's a big shift, isn't it?
Well, I couldn't say, you know. There were one or two people that in my management team who found it totally uncomfortable and just couldn't deal with it and moved on. And, you know, I think are very happy in where they are now, but they certainly couldn't make that change. And I think that does happen. But we lost very, very few people. I think we, you know, most people found that after a while quite refreshing, but it did take a year, you know, and we had to create some successes in order for them to want to engage more, and also being transparent and open with them to say, well, you know, we can't just throw money at the problem. We need to, you know, work within the constraints. I mean, the upside was within 3 years, we increased turnover by, you know, almost close to 70%. We went from operating in two countries, of which one was the UK, and the other two, over 20 countries around the world, and we now have representation there. We developed over 12 new products, and we now, you know, we created a sustainable platform, you know, for which we could then create the next 3-year plan, which we are now.
Just kind of your focus now. Yeah. It's really good to hear you talk about these things, because one of the things we've been looking at is this pivoting to the future,
yes. You know,
this Accenture model about reframing and thinking. And you know, in our conversation, you're doing exactly all the things that they've observed in the most successful high-performing businesses. You've innovated from within, you're releasing that trapped value, and that focus on people as the enabling, the actor, the change of culture, because they are the future. It's a really interesting reflection to hear you just talk about it naturally in your business.
Well, it is a natural thing in business. Well, it should be a natural thing in businesses. And we've gone back to taking on apprentices every year. We spend quite a significant amount of money on training, retraining people, developing new skills, getting them what I call always, I say, we're dragging us into the 21st century, because somebody parked us in the, I'll be nice, in the 20th century, sometimes it could be the 19th. But, you know, certainly, you know, the people have responded wonderfully to that, where now, you know, innovation happens every day, and I, you know, a lot of people, when they use the word innovation, they're thinking about developing a new space shuttle, but innovation happens at such low levels, and I don't want to use the word low levels, but at basic levels within
an organization. It's that ways of working, isn't it? It's right down to how do I make the thing I do today better, faster, quicker?
Absolutely, because people feel enabled, that they're allowed to do that, that they are, and why wouldn't you do that? Why would I want to, as a manager, or why would I want any of my management team to be spending all day telling trying to innovate on behalf of a receptionist who actually knows that job better than we ever will, experiences that all day. Just let them do the job the best that they can, and that for me is the right way to do it, and that's the way you unlock the thing. Because after a while, they then start understanding that it's not just about their area, it's about how it affects the whole business. So we do a lot of training. We've broken down those silos where people used to, you know, do their bit, chuck it over the fence, the next lot, and you know, everybody was always pointing a finger at somebody else. You know, wasn't optimized, where now nobody actually thinks about that in that way. They all the time, the people stop me, and when I walk through the shop floor and are willing to openly say something, we don't respond to we respond to everything, but we don't do everything that everybody suggests, because otherwise we wouldn't get anything done against our.
So you've got some really strong encouragement here, getting people to, you know, rethink the way they work and about adapting for the future. One of the things we talked about earlier was about digital disruption and the effect that's having. and the need to be how it impacts how we work with our customers and collaborators as well. It'd be good to get your kind of thoughts on that too today.
When we looked at where we were lagging behind in terms of product development, and you know, Industry 4.0 is now happening, whether we like it or not, or has been happening, just a lot of people haven't recognized it. I think I made the comment the other day that reading a survey that in the UK, I think only 8% of companies were aware of this. And I'm talking about pre-COVID. I think a lot more people have now embraced that. And whereas in Germany, 80% of companies were aware of it and were working towards it. In our own business, we found that the connectivity of everything and all our systems needed to be, you needed to be able to connect it, because people were looking to capitalize on data and turn it into information, which made their, so we had to change our products and our services to meet that need, which allowed us and the people within our business to then start accepting, but we ourselves need that same transformation. And so I would say we're in that phase now of the second 3 years of our plan, where digitalization now is everything that we do, from how we communicate with customers, from internally, that, you know, where people used to fill out forms, and that it's all been done by, you know, electronically and barcode readers. And now if anybody develops a form, somebody will question them and say, but why are we doing this? Surely there must be a way we can do this more productively. So for us, we just started implementing at the beginning of this year, which I must say COVID allowed us the breathing space to, inevitably when you put in new systems, there's always teething problems and there's always getting people to go along with it.
Our adoption process, isn't it? Giving them time to learn and to feel comfortable and to make it every day.
Absolutely. And for people to change that mindset, but I used to do it this way and now it's a different way, but ultimately focus on what are we trying to, you know, what's the outcomes that we're looking for. One of the things that I said to somebody who was asking me, who was wanting to do an MBA, and I said, the problem I always have with people doing, and I did an MBA, and I found only when I started doing stuff within a business that I found the relevance of most of the stuff you learned it. And this is a perfect example about a lot of those things are coming back, how you do that. And so it's been quite exciting for me as a person, because, you know, if you're not growing, you're dying, in my view. But to see how we can utilize, you know, lots of new thought, whether it's in the academic field or it's people like yourselves who are constantly looking for what other companies are doing. And so, you know, as a business, we do that now. It's become part of our culture. We're constantly looking at what other people are doing, learn from that, discuss with people, see, you know, and lots of times it's a bit like it's the loose change under the sofa. You know, there's lots of loose change in an organization, and we every day we find that, hey, look, there's some loose change here. You know, we can utilize this to do something else. And it's been a fantastic journey, you know, and I think, because I don't and I hope that the people within the organization feel the same way. We also invested massively in people, as I said, apprenticeships. And now some of those people that we're putting in at the start stage, like apprentices, are now becoming engineers. One of them has done that. In actual fact, last year won the Aerospace Engineer of the Year Award.
Yes, I saw that. That was brilliant.
For developing a new product in the digital space. So,
well, of course, that person is a digital native. They don't know anything different. So for them, that's just the way of working. So
and that's
trying
to
bring your average age down from 47.
And that's
to
the latent talent that just lies in you. That's just, and this word, it always has a negative connotation, exploiting, but it is, it's taking that talent that already exists in there, because if I had to give it to one of the older people, I'm not saying they're not capable, it's just alien to them. It's not, it's more difficult. Whereas now, you know, they are, you know, it's suddenly taken those younger employees and put them in a place where the older employees absolutely respect them now. They've, you know, they've earned their respect now. And so, you know, that makes for a more harmonious environment as well. It's digitalization, I think, in any business is definitely the future. And it's not about, you know, making robots and augmented, you know, reality systems. Those are all part of the 3D printing. I mean, we're doing all those things now. I mean, even now, we don't use it in our production, but we've developed robot systems for our customers to do that. We would never be able to do that without making the investment in skills and talent and adopting and looking at the relevance. And I must always caution that, you know, you can't just adopt every digitalization system that's out there. You've got to look at what is relevant to your business, and you also got to do it at a pace that you don't overwhelm everybody, firstly, and secondly, that it adds value. It adds real value. It's appropriate.
You can't compromise your existing business as well. You know, you've still got to deliver, haven't you, at the same time as you're putting these in. So it's a real fine balance of judgment.
But it's, I think that any business needs to be reviewing that constantly. Yeah. And we, in actual fact, just yesterday going into the design office where what we make is pretty big, heavy stuff. And it's, you know, 3D printing is a new technology that's getting adopted pretty fast in the manufacturing industry. But for us, it doesn't have a massive relevance yet. However, we need to learn that technology. We need to find out, you know, how does that benefit of us? So it has no real benefit from a production point of view, but from a strategic point of view, I see it as and prototyping and looking at how can we embrace new technologies for the future of our product. So, so yesterday I said, yeah, let's go and buy one of those, and so that you guys can get used to the technology and find out how that is going to.
You do have to have a bit of play, don't you? You have to have the, okay, let's be curious. Let's invest in this. Let's see if it'll work for us and add value for the future. If not, well, we'll learn something from it. We'll learn that it's not right for us as well.
And in actual fact, those for me are the biggest lessons. And I always say to people when they, you know, initially we were developing stuff and something wouldn't work, and they would, well, that's been a failure. I said, no, that's been a massive success because we've just learned how not to do something. Or that something doesn't work. So from there you can build, you know, if everything just goes right all the time, you know, then you've got a question that are you pushing yourselves far enough, you know, or are you just actually doing what you always did, you know, because, you know, you know, not everything can, that's life, you know, things just don't go the way you plan them. It's what you do. I always say to everybody, it's not a problem unless we can't fix it. So we don't have problems. We just have challenges in this organization where, okay, there's a challenge. We need to overcome that. And once you get that culturally into the business, so even when we started adopting or digitalizing our business processes, if that culture's there, people will, you know, they don't get frustrated and say, this is a lot of nonsense. I'm not prepared. You know, I don't want to do this anymore. They're not committed because they already are fit. They know that this is not just something that I push a few buttons and it does it for me. I've got to work at it. I've got to find out what's the reason behind this and solve the problem. And so, as I say, to get back to the original question of digitalization, for us, we're only starting as a business on that journey, but it's certainly an exciting journey. And we are going to find that there are technologies like additive manufacturing and 3D printing, which we right now I can't see the relevance of it, but I'm almost willing to guarantee that by next year we'll say how did we, it's like I often say to people, because I'm a little bit older than them, that when a fax machine first came to town, didn't see the relevance of that, whereas, you know, after a while, you know, we couldn't do without that. It was a technology that, and like the internet is at the moment, we just couldn't conceive. In actual fact, my mother, who's in her mid-80s, couldn't conceive of not being able to, you know, have a WhatsApp call, see that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it will come and it will be adopted in different sectors at different speeds. So things like 3D printing, dental, they fit exactly, Renishaw. is around the corner from where we're based. You see things like that, the machines that they've created, 3D printing of hip replacements. So they'll come, they'll be in the materials, they're going to develop those, and they'll move sector by sector around robustness and life and being able to test things. And I'm really looking forward to what it's coming
next. Renishaw is a perfect example of a company that, because they're in our sector, the metrology sector, and they started out doing a particular thing and then have gone into other technologies that are number one, supportive of what they do, but it's not alien to their business, but and their investment into additive manufacturing has been early and really good, and now they're starting to reap the benefits of it, not only in their traditional industry, which was they did a lot for, like we do, for the Enviro, both a customer of ours and a supplier to us. So that's a perfect example how small and medium-sized businesses have adopted and or being allowed to adopt that. So, you know, now for me, and I'm hoping to achieve a very similar thing within this business, you know.
And I hope you do. You've had some significant successes in the past as well, and you're well established leader of businesses. So what advice would you give to somebody who's taking over an established business? You've had some very significant personal lessons and about impact on the people.
There are maybe two or three things. And number one, the first thing is, if you go into a new business, you need to understand the business. So you need to really take the time and effort to understand exactly what the business is, what the industry that you are in it. And the way I did it was I just took everybody along with me on that discovery journey, because, you know, down to a financial manager who thinks, well, I only know about financial stuff. You'll be absolutely surprised what insights they have into a business. So it was getting to know, what is this business about? Who are the people within the business? In order to do that, you just simply need to listen to the people. So, you know, those two things: understand the business, listen to the people, and make the time to listen to the people. And then the other thing is, never let people work for you. Let them work for what the business is, you know, what the business is trying to get that buy-in on, and that's why I did that whole thing of, and I've done that in every other business, what's the purpose of this business, you know, where are we going, get everybody aligned to that. And the people that don't align to that are going to move on and do other things. So they, and you know, I've always said to people, you know, don't, and it's never nice to fire people or to get rid of people. And because your first thing is you want to work with people, they're the ones with the expertise. Yeah. And I've often said to people, well, let me help you leave. Let me help you find the thing that you want to do in life. And that may be within this organization, but it might be out. Because if you're going to have to get up 3/4 of your life to go to work, go and do something you enjoy. And there are many, many people in your businesses that have that. So, for me, understand the business, listen to the people, and then make sure that they're working for, which is not yourself, but
for the business, yeah,
for the purpose of the business.
In terms of looking after yourself, who do you talk to? Who helps you stay sane, keep it real?
I just involve myself with, you know, other organizations.
So you have a good peer network, people that you can talk to.
And I bounce, and, you know, I sit on some boards with, I sat on the Chartered Management Institute as a trustee for a while, many different people that you get different insights from that. And you make those connections and friendships, and you talk to that. I sit on other boards. I'm also deputy chairman of the West England Aerospace Forum. So, and there's many people that sit on the board with me, and many people that you meet that are members to that of other organizations that give you insights. And
so developing that network of support around yourself, some other med roles, you know, bodies, trade bodies, other people in your industry, so that you have a broad support, so that, you know, people who can evaluate some of the things that you're thinking about as well and give you some good feedback.
Yeah, I also like to mix with people from different industries. And one thing I found with the roundtable discussion that where we first got introduced was initially I had some skepticism because, hey, hang on a minute, most of the people are here are from the events industry, which these are all obvious answers they're going to give me. Well, I'm going to get out of here. Yeah, no. You know, so you're telling me that there's no business? Well, I could have figured that. You know, everything's in lockdown. But the insights that came out of it from some of the people of different ways that they are tackling it. I mean, one of the ones which is so obvious was that right now, let's, you know, go and talk to what the particular individual did. Well, went to speak to the customers and say, what are you doing? What are the problems that you're having? And how can we assist you with that? And found synergies which their customer or potential customer wouldn't have thought, well, let's go to RPI, because RPI doesn't do those things, where in actual fact, RPI does have that, and it's helped them develop new products and services to support them. And immediately we went out and did that. And within, in actual fact, within the week, we had a customer that said, absolutely, we need, you know, to solve a problem with this. And, you know, we very quickly out of that developed a new product for them, which has really good potential in the market. So, and that comes out of a, now, if I had spoken to my peers within the aerospace industry, they said, well, we've got to wait till everybody starts flying again. And, you know, everybody's in down the hatches mode. So absolutely, I would encourage people to really, you know, do network, do, you know, make the time to involve yourself in roundtable discussions, webinars. And I think that way you'll definitely get a better perspective of what's actually going on and what opportunities there are.
Well, Peter, that is a great bit of advice to finish our conversation on today. It's been really valuable getting to know a bit more about you and your business and that very strong people-centric core capability focus that you've taken that's enabled such fantastic success at your business and have set a real core for a valuable business for the future, both for the people in it and for all the people who benefit from RPI. Thank you very much for a really rewarding and interesting conversation today.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about something that you can obviously see I'm passionate about.
Absolutely.
And every opportunity that I can get to tell people about the wonderful people we have here is always a pleasure. So thank you very much.
Well, the joy is shared. Thank you very much. To find out more about Peter and the team at RPI, go over to their website and take a look at some of the extraordinary products that they develop with great passion and great purpose. And if you'd like to listen to more HGKC podcasts, you can download them from our website at www.hgkc.com/podcasts. And thank you for listening today.